Good morning. May it please the court, Chief Justice Stiff and the members of the court. Thank you for taking this case. You're the court of last resort for me in terms of correcting the lower court's ruling. My name is Joel Block. I'm an attorney from Springfield, and I represent Dr. Cole in this writ proceeding. Here, I believe we're discussing a jurisdictional issue that simply could have been avoided by compliance with 5213 in a 90-day period. The issues that are not in dispute are the facts. There's quite a few things that we agree on, believe it or not. We all agree that suit was filed alleging malpractice back in February of 2003. We agree that the plaintiffs were husband and wife. Jim and Betty Fulbert were husband and wife and remained that married until he passed away in December of 2006. I filed suggestions of death about 3.5 months later. We agree that counsel received them. We agree that his client was on actual notice of those suggestions when they were filed, and we agree that no motion for substitution was filed until 110 days had passed.
The attorney that received service of the suggestions of death was an attorney who represented both of the Coles, is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
And was there any designation on the service of the suggestions and death as to the capacity of the person you were serving? Because they're arguing that you served the decedent's attorney as opposed to his wife's attorney.
I think that's a very interesting argument in this issue, this case and the previous case, because in these circumstances, when you're serving suggestions of death, you are never serving a deceased person or their representative, because that person is no longer a party. So that Rule 5213 was never designed to address or serve something on a person who has passed away or the representative. It really is designed to mimic 507-100, I believe, which is the statute, which says death.
But you can get a personal rep. When we're talking about Missouri, you can get a personal rep in Missouri by going to the probate court and saying you have an interest, you want to open up an estate and file the need a personal rep and serve that person.
Absolutely. That's right.
And if you could finish also what you were...
What I was saying was, and so when, and the statute says death shall be suggested upon the record. And then this rule is designed to effectuate death being suggested on the record. So when you are suggesting something to the court in this regard, it's really addressed to the court, but it's never addressed to the deceased person.
But you have to serve someone.
Absolutely.
So who do you serve?
I believe you serve counsel of record, and if you know or have a reason to believe someone will be eventually appointed, then you may have them serve. And I'll give you an example. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The plaintiff. This is a death of a plaintiff, and so it seems to me that when you look at these rules that where there's somebody dies during the pendency of litigation, there's one of two possibilities. One possibility is that the cause of action dies with the plaintiff. Now, this plaintiff is not alleged to have died from the surgery that he's suing about.
True.
He died of something else.
True.
Okay? So that he has, or whoever his estate is, has some interest in that because the cause of action doesn't die with his death. And so these rules are really designed to substitute some proper person to continue the litigation that was started by the decedent before his death.
Absolutely. It's designed to keep things going, I'm sorry.
But I guess my point is that it is really kind of an obligation that's imposed on the court to do something, the parties certainly, but that is that this is that there's going to be an uninterrupted flow. They'll be different. It'll be the same proof of negligence causing injury, causing pain and suffering and all that, which of course is cut off by the fact that the man died.
That's exactly right. I believe the rule is designed when litigation is pending to keep moving along. As a defense attorney, that's not my obligation. My obligation is to bring this thing to a favorable resolution. But I'm not the plaintiff. I'm not in court by my own choice.
But the filing of your motion requires an obligation of knowledge on behalf of the opposing parties, and you say that was accomplished here.
That's absolutely right.
You filed suggestions. Is that
right?
Okay.
Well, you filed the notice on the attorneys representing the widow, right?
Yes.
Well, but there's still no one to serve then who would represent the interests of the deceased husband, why wouldn't you also, I mean, the logical person would be the surviving widow. Why wouldn't you serve her personally as the sole heir of the husband's estate?
Two reasons that come to, my mind immediately, and both of which are laid out in my briefs. First of all, I believe I would be running the risk of being unethical if I were to contact her directly.
No. I'm just serving her with notice of suggestions of death.
That's right. I believe if I were to contact her...
Service isn't the same as contact.
I mean
the prohibition against contact is not that you send someone out to serve someone with a
as it serves, it seems, it suggests that to the widow, but go ahead.
The best argument, then, is that the rules permit me to serve as a party. I'm permitted and required to serve that party's attorney, and that's sufficient. In this case, and I think the underlying issue here is...
You're saying you knew she was represented in the action, but does the difference in capacities make a difference that you had to serve her?
That's exactly what I was getting to. There is no different capacity when I serve suggestions of death. She is not a PR at that time. She was nothing at that time.
Yeah, well, she was the sole heir.
That's right.
Well, maybe.
But a widow doesn't necessarily...
You don't know.
Right.
You don't know.
Right.
Time.
Right.
The other problem that you have, and actually it's the problem for the plaintiff's attorney. Assume the widow was not a co-plaintiff, but he was just plaintiff suing for his own cause of action. Then it seems to me that the plaintiff's attorney, under your theory, gets into a little bit of a bind because he's got to go out and solicit a client to take the place of the client that he has. And whom does he solicit? Does he solicit the lawyer down the hall? Does he go to the family? Does he wait for somebody to open an estate, which may never happen? Most people die without going through probate.
Or does he get a plaintiff ad litem?
Right, or something.
That's right. Any of those possibilities.
I mean, a plaintiff ad litem would be might be something, but again, what you're talking about is that he has no authority to do anything because his clients died.
Well,
representing this deceased client carry with it the authority to go hustle a substitute?
Well, I wouldn't agree with the way you're characterizing it, Judge, but I would say that he has no authority to have a relationship with a person who has passed away. But he has authority. He can do whatever he wants in terms of finding someone to be in that person's stead, which this court has set up rules and their statutes to affect that process so that the litigation can either stop or continue, and we don't have a situation where we're waiting and waiting and waiting.
Can you address the Holmes case that was mentioned in our prior arguments that there's, you have, as the attorney for the deceased party, you have a continued interest, your person in interest in the litigation?
Oh, I thought the Holmes case was the question there was who can serve the suggestions of death. Once the party has passed away, who is then a person in interest with authority to serve suggestions of death? That's my understanding of the issue in the Holmes case that you're referring to, Judge. And there, the court ruled that the attorney for the deceased person is still considered a person in interest and therefore can file.
As opposed to who can be served.
That's right.
So we have a case that says the attorney can serve the suggestions of death, but the attorney cannot receive service of the motion to substitute. As a different
Is there a case that says that
an attorney cannot receive service because somebody's got to?
I believe the Holleran case is Judge Blackmore's opinion. The Holleran case says that if there's one plaintiff, and that's I think the key distinction between Holleran and this case, if there's one plaintiff, then and then the person dies and that plaintiff dies, their attorney has no authority to accept service on that deceased plaintiff's behalf. But that's not the case here. The case here is that we have two, and one passed away, and one is still living, and asking me to serve the suggestions of death on a personal representative that does not exist is requiring an impossibility, or imposing duties on me that I don't have.
The attorney also has an interest, is a person with an interest, because he or she likely has a contract with the decedent that entitles him to a percentage of the recovery. So, in fact, he does have an interest in the cause of action.
Sure, he has a party in interest as a person who can serve, and if under that reasoning, has an interest as a person in interest who can receive suggestions of death.
So he can open an estate.
I'm sorry?
So he could open an estate.
He'd be a creditor.
He'd be a creditor. He could have an estate opened and have a personal representative appointed in that case.
I agree with that. And in this case, the situation is that the gentleman who passed away was a resident of Oklahoma and passed away in Oklahoma, so the Missouri courts don't have jurisdiction to...
Well, why shouldn't it be incumbent on you to find a plaintiff ad litem and then serve that plaintiff ad litem?
Mm-hmm. The reason it's not incumbent upon
the suggestions
me.
Of death.
because the rule is silent on that.
That's right. That's exactly mm-hmm. right. And because that's not my duty. My duty is to get this thing over with, a favorable resolution to my client. Mm-hmm. So if that's dismissal without prejudice, I'll rather have that than have the case continue.
Yeah, but you've got to find somebody to notify of your notice of suggestions of death.
That's right. And in a situation where one person is a party and that person passes away, for example, I have another case where we have a lady who filed a malpractice action, and she passed away, and her husband was not a party. I have a service process server go and serve him personally. Other, beyond the spouse, I feel like it's a guessing game. Am I supposed to find children, close friends, or where do
we serve them all?
So then, do you ask the court to appoint a plaintiff ad litem in that situation, or what do you do?
No, in that situation, I have the remaining spouse who is not a party personally served. And then when the 90 days have passed, I'm going to file a motion to dismiss.
Because if you ask for the appointment of a plaintiff ad litem to serve them suggestions of death, that kind of is a substitution of the party mm-hmm. that the other side should be proposing.
That's correct. I'm doing their job.
And that's why I went back to, why didn't you serve the widow personally as well as her lawyer? I mean, her lawyer can accept service for her because he or she is representing her as a co-plaintiff in the case. But then she should perhaps be served individually as the next of kin or whatever you want to say.
If she had been designated in another capacity, I believe that would have applied.
But isn't that redundant to serve her twice?
Well, it's redundant to serve her and her attorney. Mm-hmm. I believe it is. I mean, I think the rules clearly say she serves.
So there's a will and she's not included in the will.
Yeah, that's right.
What's the impact of the remedy, and that is to dismiss without prejudice?
I know you're going to ask that question.
Exactly. can they turn around and refile?
Sure. In other words, can a personal representative refile the case? Sure, they can refile. That doesn't mean I'm going to raise objections, i.e., it's outside the statute of limitations.
That's what was my, that was
my
question.
You're in the trial court, though.
That's right. So no trial. Right. That's what's said.
That's right. Well, basically, if you suffer a dismissal, you have a one-year savings period. When does that run from?
That's an excellent question. I believe the savings statute...
If you suffer a non-suit, those are the words of the savings statute.
Okay. If that is equivalent to a involuntary dismissal without prejudice...
That's the date. So we haven't had one yet.
Then you may have a year, but you may also not have a year because the parties will change from the present suit to the next suit. I believe there's case law on that I would raise mm-hmm. in that situation.
But interesting. Whole relation back issue with new
that's
parties.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah, a minute 20 seconds left.
Actually, your minute 20 seconds over. So.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. We'll hear from you under the red light.
Well, thank you. I'm going to take a little of my 15 minutes to introduce myself and my co-counsel, Daniel Giraldi, Hartley Law Firm, Bonita, Oklahoma. My name is John Hartley. I recognize the perils of arguing Missouri law being an Oklahoma lawyer, but I want to establish my heritage. My family's from Stockton, Missouri. I fished the Sac River as a child until it was dammed up to create Stockton Lake, and my family homestead lies at the bottom of Stockton Lake.
We don't remember those two football games.
I had to attend OU, but I'm really an Aggie. My grandmother taught mathematics at Aurora High School for over 20 years. So
you've established your credentials.
I am probably better than that Kansas lawyer that practices a little bit in Missouri.
Yesterday we had a trial judge from Oklahoma who would have been very happy from Oklahoma.
Right. But in this case, I might not be far behind him and not knowing all of the Missouri law, and that's the genesis of this proceeding. I undertook the representation of Mr. and Mrs. Talbert at local counsel. We were served with suggestions of death as the attorney didn't realize the importance of that in Missouri. In Oklahoma, we have a settlement provision, but it doesn't result in a dismissal of the case. And in this case, it's our position that the 90-day, in effect, statute of limitations has never commenced, and that Judge Mouton appointed Betty Talbert and substituted her in the case as personal representative of James Talbert on August 12th of last year, and that this whole matter is moved because of that. Because the 90 days doesn't start running until there's been service of the suggestions of death, and there's been a discussion on how that's accomplished.
Or who.
Well, how
is
your
who. And that's very, very important. Because if you look at the rule, the suggestion of death is served in the manner of service of the motion. The substitution would be served in the manner of service of the summons. But if you go to Rule 4301 on service of a motion or service of pleadings other than the initial petition, you work your way down through there, and it says, upon a party, by delivering or mailing a copy to the party under Part A or in Part D, by serving in a manner for the service of the summons.
So is your position it just can't be done?
No, I think you can have someone. I think the defendant, if they are truly feeling like they're caught in infinity and never going to have the case resolved, can have a party appointed for the purpose of receiving service.
But why would they want to do that? That's your obligation, not theirs.
Well,
they shouldn't do their work, your work for you.
I think it's the obligation of the party that's wanting to have a more...
But defendant's obligation, defendant gets to serve suggestion of death so the case can proceed timely or be dismissed, and you're saying the only way to do that is to have a substitute party put in so that it won't be dismissed, which kind of takes away from their right.
And the only way that your alternative writ can be turned into a peremptory writ is that if you find and you hold that service upon an estate can be accomplished by mailing notice to a widow notice to an interested party.
You don't have an estate at that point. There is no estate that's open, isn't that the facts of this case?
There is now.
There is an estate. There's been no formal administration.
Well, at
proceeding.
That time, there was no estate, though.
Yeah.
There was no formal administration proceeding commenced, but there is an estate.
No, but at that time, there was no estate filed. There was nothing filed with
no
the probate court.
No probate or administration filed, correct. But this gentleman had an estate. And to get... This is a punitive statute, and... There were other heirs other than Mrs. Talbert. There were daughters and sons by previous marriage, other interested parties. Now, how can a ruling result in dismissal of a case where the estate has not been represented? And your prior case law holds that the estate, when the interest of an estate's estate is involved, that estate is a necessary party.
Okay, so how should your opposing counsel should have gone about this?
I believe he should have appointed a personal representative.
He's suspended. He's not going to do that. Who can he serve if there's no...
All he's doing is serving suggestions of death, right?
Well, you can say that's all he's doing. All he's doing is setting it up to have the estate kicked out of court 90 days later. And the question is, fairness and due process here as to who should receive that service.
So does he petition the court to find somebody to serve process on? Or is that what you're saying?
To accomplish due process, I don't see how you could otherwise do it. I don't believe that this court's function or mine or Mr. Block's to try to impute procedure that is not written into the statute.
So you
have to fall back.
Your answer is yes. That's
yes,
what
sir.
He needs to do.
Yes, sir. I think due process requires that.
Because I can restate your argument without insulting you, your intelligence, but because I think you have a point here, and that is, if we don't do it your way, which is to have the court appoint a personal representative specifically just for the purpose of receiving service, then say the children by the previous marriage who have an interest in the estate have had their rights and interests cut off without any notice to them whatsoever. So it is necessary for your opponent to have some to serve somebody who will, in effect, serve the people whose interests are going to be cut off by that thing. That's very simple, Mullane versus Central Hanover Trust.
Correct. And just like the example about the widow who's left out of the will, there's a prenuptial agreement, the second marriage, everything goes to the kids. Mm-hmm. How can you establish the rule that by mailing notice to the widow, that's sufficient under Rule 50?
Well, how does the trial court know who to appoint to accept service of the motion for substitution?
Under Oklahoma law, the widow is not automatically appointed personal representative. She has priority, but she's not automatically appointed. I would assume Missouri law is the same.
But the defendant does have an interest in getting a personal representative because the 90 days doesn't start running until he gets service with someone. We have an analogous case in Missouri where he brought in due process where there was an abandoned mobile home. And the law secretly said something about you could post the notice on the abandoned mobile home as far as getting the forfeiture on the mobile home. We said no, that's not good. No one's going to see this notice on the abandoned mobile home, so that's not good service. So if there's an abandoned if someone's dead, no one's getting notice. I mean, it does serve its purpose to have someone to serve so that it gets his 90 days going.
This court in 1988 in the Holleran case stated that service is an essential part of the filing under the rule, and they're talking about Rule 52.13.
Service is an essential part. And on who do they say?
They don't establish that. They do say that serving on the attorney isn't adequate.
It's just amazing there wouldn't have been prior cases for plaintiffs or defendants that said how you serve them.
I was just glad the Holleran was out there.
I'm sure you were, but isn't the attorney the one who has the attorney for the decedent? Isn't that the person who possibly should be served because that's the person most motivated, most likely to know who the heirs are and know who? So should we overrule Holleran because and not to the detriment of someone at the present time? But is that wise law, since that's the person who has the best opportunity to file the motion to substitute a party?
I'm glad you added your qualifications. I was going to ask you if you do that to do it prospectively in this application, but I think that Holleran says that I have no express or implied authority to receive service on behalf of Mr. Colbert's successors. That's the statement.
The reason you need a personal representative is that personal representative has to be given the duty as personal representative to find the people who have interest in the cause of action, which is an asset of the estate.
Correct, and has to have legal authority to represent.
Which you do not. Which you, as plaintiff's attorney, do not have.
Right.
Then the personal representative has duties too. They have to send out. There's creditors within 6 months. There's a whole procedure here that goes with being a personal representative of the estate.
And this is an alternative to, otherwise you can wait within 9 months, you have to file letters and so forth, and there will be, this is supposed to be a shortcut, but you're saying to take advantage of the shortcut, you have to, in effect, bring forward the 9 month period for filing letters and so forth. I mean, it's not a substitute, it's simply another way of getting the estate started.
I think that's right, and I'm sure this gets everyone's attention when they get a suggestion of death and personal representatives are substituted.
But they don't get it under your
thing. They don't want to try to figure out what the ultimate end and result is if you don't comply. Unfortunately, I wasn't aware of the provision.
Well,
I did not obtain, and that's no excuse here. I'm not asking you to decide the case on that. But I did think about that attorney that practices in Missouri and goes back over to Kansas when you made that reference in the previous case.
Well, part of the solution could be that the intermediate appellate courts have found that the 90 days cannot be extended and it's absolute. And in light of some difficulty or good faith efforts to accomplish this, can part of the solution be that 90 days should not be absolute and could be extended?
That's a possible solution. In this case, we were continuing to work on the case. In fact, this case would have been tried in January of this year, but for the alternative writ that was issued.
I understand
we would be done by now. At least at the trial court.
But you're saying the 90 days never started to run because there are no suggestions.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
So how do you ever start it to run?
Well,
without going through what you normally would have 9 months to do?
Well, that's I think what you have to take that step. And Hollerin does address that issue when it says one who wants to put opposing parties and interests out of court by the expiration of a time limit must take the appropriate formal steps to bring them before the court. Doesn't say the plaintiff has to do it. Doesn't say the defendant has to do it. It says the party wanting to remove someone from court. Opposing parties, one who wants to put an opposing party and interest out of court. That's the effect of what this is trying to do, is to put the estate of James Talbert out of court without taking the appropriate formal steps to bring that estate before the court.
I understand your different hypotheticals about what could happen, but if the purpose of 5213 is to notify all interested parties, and in effect it was accomplished here, how's your client prejudiced?
I don't think it was accomplished here. I don't think all, first of all, I don't agree that all interested parties were notified.
Who wasn't notified?
Pardon?
Who was not notified?
The two sons and the daughter by previous marriage who are not a party to the proceeding, they weren't notified. They weren't served. There's no summons. There's no publication of notice.
And you don't represent them?
I do not represent them. And in effect, the mailing to me as the attorney for Betty Talbert in her individual capacity does not comply with the statute.
But it gives her actual notice.
It gives her actual notice. But again, she has no legal authority upon receipt of that notice to act on behalf of the estate yet. Now, we got her legal authority after we realized the error of our ways, and she is now the personal representative. She's been substituted in the case. My argument is this is moot at this point because the 90 days never started running because they never properly effected the procedure under 5213 as required by service.
Many times the personal representative is not appointed until long after a 90-day period like this has expired.
And that's not in the record, and I wasn't going to argue it, but since you touched on it. This lady is 70-something years old. She wasn't too particularly interested in coming and going to court and getting appointed as personal representative until she had to. We left her alone for a while. But that's not in the record. It's not part of our argument. It's why you should rule in our favor. It's just a factor.
It's a practicality.
Yes, and which maybe is one that should be considered in whether or not you find a reason to allow courts to have discretion to extend the 90-day for some extenuating circumstance.
Should the rule here be geared to when a personal representative is appointed? Because until then, nobody knows who's on first.
In order to comply with due process requirements, that is my analysis, and that's the conclusion I come to, where you're dealing with an estate.
How does the other party know when a personal representative is appointed?
Well, in this day and age, there's several ways to do it now with the Internet, but without that knowledge, and unless Mr.
We set a rule, we could require a notice to the court or something.
Yes, I think that under the existing rules, I don't believe there's a procedure in place to require notification of death.
This circumstance dealing with suggestions of death and substitution of parties has to be an issue throughout the country on the federal level. Missouri doesn't have clear guidelines, it appears, but how is it generally handled?
In the federal level, they have discretion to extend the time period. That's one of the things that came out in the Gardner case.
And who has to be served with suggestions of death?
It's very similar procedure to Missouri.
So it could be anybody.
You've got to serve
somebody.
Serve who?
I don't believe it's specified.
I mean, in 90 days, it's pretty short. I mean, we talk about someone dying and sorting through their person's effects. And the first thing you think about is that, gee, I need to run to the courthouse and become a personal rep. There are things like funerals and sorting through effects. I mean,
but the 90 days doesn't start. I mean, you're saying it never started. It still hasn't started.
Because
there was never a suggestion of death. So we're not even, I mean, your case doesn't involve extending the 90 days, although the other case.
No, the only way it would involve extending the 90 days is if you determine that mailing
the suggestion,
of death to an attorney for the widow constitutes service upon an estate,
right,
which I submit to you, is not service upon an estate under Missouri law.
Because she wasn't appointed, or she wasn't substituted till later.
Pardon?
Because she wasn't substituted till much later.
She was substituted
August of 07.
10 days, I believe.
But she still would qualify as a person of interest, wouldn't she, or person with interest? Mm-hmm. I don't know what the rule says.
Yes.
Potentially. In this specific case, she was, but not always.
She didn't represent all the interests.
She did not represent all the interests. She didn't have that 100% of the interest in this.
Right. When, I mean, before she was appointed personal representative. Now she does.
Now she does.
Right.
But I know your time's up. But the other side of it, this seems simple because it's a wife and husband, but it's not always that easy. I mean, it's basically finding the heirs and getting this all sorted out, it could be a long process.
It's not in the legislature. I don't think contemplated the difficulties when they enacted this.
Thank you, counsel.
What's the statute number? 507.100, is that right?
507.100, I believe.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, counsel.
Judge Tolman, I think you're talking about the Hollerin case. And Judge Blackmar in this court in a 5-2 decision addressed that issue where you don't have the heirs represented by counsel, but here...
And what do you do then if you don't have the heirs represented?
Then I would suggest you have them personally served, which is what I have recently done. But I would also say that this court has looked at this issue recently after Hollerin. I don't think that the appellate courts are the only ones who have made a statement. State v. Reese, 920 South of 2nd 94, cited in my brief, looks at this very issue, and I believe that's controlling authority in this matter. And the final important point I'd like to raise is that this claim that this proceeding is moot because the 90 days never ran has never been raised until this very moment. Now, counsel has stated in his briefs that my filing was insufficient to start the 90 days, but as to the mootness of being here, that's a claim that I believe is waived because it's never been raised until oral argument.
Tell us again what Reese says.
Reese says that there was an 8-month delay, and Reese says that you're outside the 90 days and you're gone.
Delay to what?
I'm sorry?
Delay after what?
Failure to substitute. But who was the notice of the suggestion of death served upon?
I believe it was served by the party who had passed away.
Because
so there's a difference there.
Right, it is a difference.
But don't you have an obligation then to serve all the persons of interest?
No, I don't. I don't believe I do. There's nothing in writing that would suggest that.
Why not?
But if this court would graft a requirement in that regard, who has the paramount duty? Me or this or the attorney for the other side?
I think if interests
have competing interests, I mean, or conflicting interests, why wouldn't you want to have to serve all of them? Or why shouldn't you serve all of them?
Why should I not serve all of them?
Yes.
Because I want the case to go away.
Well, but I mean, if you're the defendant and you want, obviously,
well,
you want the time to start
running.
Right.
But
right.
for due process purposes, don't you have to serve the suggestion of death on the people whose interests will be affected if it does go away? And if there's a personal representative, that's great. You can just serve one. But if there's not, you may not get to take advantage of the rule unless you give personal service to all those. And you may not, you're right, you may not know who they are. There may not be a way. So you may not be able to take advantage of that part of the rule. You may have to wait for letters to be filed and so forth.
And that's the bottom line is this. When you want to put someone out of court, they have to be in court first, and that's what this court is getting at. Here, the person who was eventually the PR was before the court when I served her attorney of record, as this court requires.
But she wasn't a PR at that time.
That's right, and that requires an impossibility.
No, it doesn't. It requires the court to appoint a personal representative for the purpose of notifying the people who are the potential people of interest who have interest in the estate of this decedent. After those people get notified, then your 90 days starts to run, and if nobody comes forward with a properly appointed personal representative to continue the litigation, then you get your dismissal. I think that's exactly what Hollerin says.
But how do you do that if the estate's not in Missouri?
The court has jurisdiction
over the person it appoints as a personal representative for the purpose of obtaining service on whoever are the heirs, or if there's an estate open in Oklahoma, to serve that estate. Because you cannot cut off all of the people who have those interests in that cause of action in Missouri unless you give them notice that their interests are going to be cut off.
I gave him notice. And I would add that if we go follow that suggestion, you're overruling legions of cases. If you follow
we're only following Holleran.
Holleran is distinguishable on the facts. I believe if you rule in my favor, which I would ask you to do formally on the record, you are following every single Missouri case, including Holleran, on this issue.
Which says what? Why would we be overruling them? Because
No. You would be
following. I'm sorry.
You would be following, extending the authority,
right.
And overruling nothing if you rule my way, which I ask you to do.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.